Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Imagine, if you can, that over the next 8 weeks there was an event in which 38,000 young Australian men died. Well, that was the reality in World War I, an enormous death toll over just a two-month period as the result of battles fought on the French Western Front and in Belgium. It's 100 years since what's called Passchendaele, or the Third Battle of Ypres, the major British offensive in Flanders in 1917. The plan was to break through the strongly fortified German defences around Ypres to attack the German submarine bases on the Belgian coast. All of the Australian divisions were involved, and sadly some families lost several sons in the various battles. We spoke to Matt McLaughlin, a war historian who leads tours to various World War I battlefields. You'll also hear the voice of returned soldier Ted Smout and the music of Ralph Vaughan Williams. More on that at the end.
It's absolutely incredible, isn't it? It's the one thing about the First World War that we can never get our heads around, just the sheer scale of the loss. If there was any sort of battle today where you lost dozens of men, there would be, quite rightly, an outcry as to how that battle had been run. This was a battle where, in the space of weeks, we lost 38,000 men killed and wounded. So you can't begin to imagine the effect that that would have had on families throughout Australia.
Oh, and the national psyche itself. Why were we at Passchendaele?
Well, this was a big attempt by the Allies to break out of a bit of an entrapment the Germans had around them for most of the war. So the high ground around the town of Ypres in Belgium was dominated by the Germans, and the town of Ypres is fairly close to the coast. And the Allies were worried that that the Germans could break through and reach the coastline, and they needed to break out of this this ensnarement that the Germans had them in. So they launched attack on Passchendaele Village, which was the highest point on the battlefield, in an attempt to push the Germans out of these positions and to open up the battlefield, and hopefully a bit of a return to more open fighting and a break from this this stalemate that had enveloped them since 1914.
It started on the 20th of September at Menin Road.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a series of four very big battles that the Australians were involved in. I mean, this whole campaign was called the Third Battle of Ypres, and it began in July 1917 and went until November. But the Australians were involved in four very big actions throughout September and October. Menin Road, then Polygon Wood, then Broodseine Ridge, and then Passchendaele in October. So the opening phases of the battle actually went fairly well. The first three actions I just described were quite successful, and the Allies succeeded in capturing ground from the Germans, albeit at quite a high cost. But the last one, the Battle of Passchendaele in early October, was the one that where everything changed. It started to rain, the battlefield flooded, and that attack became a complete disaster. You imagine that in this tiny area around the town of Ypres, they'd been fighting for 3 years, and imagine what heavy shell fire had done to that landscape. It was absolutely devastated. There was no branches left on the trees. The whole area was just a moonscape of craters. And if you can imagine, then you take that environment, and then you add rain, you add torrential rain to it, and the whole battlefield just turned to a quagmire. It just turned to mud. And that was the most horrific part of this battle. The men were trying to advance through thigh-deep mud. The shells weren't exploding in the soft ground. Men were falling off the tracks and getting wounded and then drowning in the mud. It was just an absolutely horrific time.
Can you give us an idea of the size of these battlefields?
Half a dozen city blocks. That's the entire area that would make up a battlefield like this. And you just had hundreds of thousands of men, sometimes millions of men, shoved into this terribly small space.
Goodness.
And when you consider the advanced weaponry of the time. This was the first modern war. Artillery, machine guns, aircraft, tanks. You can just see why in that confined space people were going to be killed and wounded in horrific numbers.
What would the sound and smell have been like?
Absolutely horrific. The one thing that you talk, when you talk to a veteran of any war, this doesn't just apply to the first war, you talk to a veteran of any war and the first thing they will tell you about is the noise. It's just so loud. Explosions, gunfire, shouts of men. It's just horrifically loud. The entire churned up battlefield would have been a horrific sight, you know, an unnatural sight. You're not used to seeing these sorts of things. So seeing men blown apart in the mud and in the waterlogged trenches would have been horrific. And then, of course, the smell from years of bodies lying out in no man's land and rotting away. There's nothing here that we can, 100 years down the track, understand and put into terms that we can actually understand. If you weren't there, you will never understand what it was like. But I've got to say, I think that's a good thing. I don't think you want to, people don't want to experience this firsthand. And we can certainly understand why the men who went through it and survived brought back so much baggage with them when they came back to Australia. You know, when you've got hundreds of thousands of men in such a small space, contamination is going to be part of everyday life. So just imagine the disgusting state of the mud in the battlefield at that time. And then imagine you're a young bloke, you're a 19 or a 20-year-old, given a gun and told to go out there and do your best. Just absolutely horrific. We tend to have this sort of noble naivety that we give the men that went off to fight. You know, we say that, oh, they didn't know what they were getting into. It is true that no one had ever seen a war like this one. But the soldiers who enlisted knew what it meant to fight in a war. This was a time when war was a very common thing, when being a soldier in the army was considered an excellent career choice. And at this time in Australia, the number one pastime was rifle shooting. So, I mean, this was a very different time from what we experience now, but they certainly had no idea of what they'd encounter when they got over there, and no one possibly could. No one had seen a war on this scale with casualties of this magnitude before.
The ironic, horrible, terrible thing to contemplate is that by 1918, a year later, the Germans just ran over the whole place with tanks and took it back again.
Yeah, that's right. The Germans received a big influx of men early in 1918 because the Russians had withdrawn from the war. And so the Germans had been fighting against both us and the Russians. When the Russians pulled out of the war, the Germans all of a sudden found themselves with a million extra men that they sent over to the Western Front to fight against us. So in early 1918, they launched a very big attack along the line and captured a lot of the battlefields that we had spent years trying to take from them. So they overran most of these battlefields in the Ypres salient. The battlefields in the Somme that we had captured at such a huge cost in 1916 were overrun. And within a few days, most of these areas were back in German hands. Now, of course, the final result was we won the war and the Germans were kicked out of France and Belgium. So obviously the right result was achieved in the end. But for those dark days in early 1918, it looked like everything that we sacrificed so much for at Passchendaele was all going to be for nothing.
Was their sacrifice in vain?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that I don't subscribe to this idea that the First World War was futile. I think the First World War absolutely had to be fought. The First World War and the Second World War are really two chapters of the same story. And the things that made the Germans so detestable in the Second World War applied in a big measure in the First World War as well. So this was just the opening chapter of that entire 20th century saga. And in terms of the actual fighting, the problem was that when you get very equally matched armies with the same technology, and this very new type of technology for the First World War, as I said, machine guns, tanks, artillery, aircraft, the things we still fight a war with today, when you get that modern technology and you put it in a very small space for the first time, casualties are going to be very, very heavy. It's just the nature of that war. You put so many men in, they've got to face this terrible killing technology, and unfortunately a lot of them are going to die. And that was the story with the First World War. Yes, there were certainly mistakes that were made, and I think most historians would agree that this final chapter of the Third Battle of Passchendaele should probably never have been fought in the first place, that they should have stopped once the battlefield flooded. So mistakes were certainly made. But I think overall the First World War was a very important war for world security and for world history.
Yes.
And it definitely had to be fought. I think it's interesting in Australia. Australia can never really understand what we lost in the First World War in particular, because we don't know what country we would have become if these 60,000 young men who went off and died, if they'd been able to come home and had never gone to the war in the first place and been able to contribute to society. I mean, we lost 60,000 men killed. We lost 200,000 wounded, plus just about every man who went off, which is in the magnitude of 350,000, suffered mental issues, they suffered unemployment, there was a very difficult time for families with a lot of domestic violence.
Yes, and those effects are felt generationally because of that.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is the experience of the First World War. And we don't know what we lost. We don't know what Australia would have been like had that war not occurred and had we had that entire generation of fine young men contributing to society instead of going off and fighting this this terrible war. So it had a massive change on Australian society, the First World War in particular. The Second World War did as well, but the First War, just because of the sheer number of deaths out of our small population, we lost 60,000 men killed out of a population of only 5 million. So an incredible burden on society. It meant that families were devastated for decades. It meant that the businesses struggled because they didn't have good workers. It meant that there was huge social problems in Australia. So this was a war that the terrible echoes carried on for decades after 1918.
And yet, they secured world peace.
You know, I, as I said, I don't believe the First World War was futile. I believe that it certainly had to be fought. There's no doubt it was absolutely terrible. But Australia certainly did the right thing by getting involved. And we perform magnificently on all these battlefields.
Well, we're involved in a very long war, our longest ever war in the Middle East right now. We're looking at the prospect of something happening on the Korean Peninsula around the South China Sea. If it happened, it would be unlike anything that the world had ever seen, which is an echo of World War I itself. But war will be different because in some ways you've got drones, you've got people with buttons and missiles that go a long way. It's not the bogged down in the mud hand-to-hand fighting, is it?
Yeah, we've come a long way in 100 years. I mean, it's terrible in so many ways that we have to talk about our incredible ability to kill people more efficiently. But that is what we're talking about. In the First World War, the way to fight a war was to give a man a rifle and to put him in the field. And obviously we've moved on a lot from that. And the war that we're currently fighting in the Middle East, versus ISIS and versus Al-Qaeda, is very different from the war against imperialistic Germany in 1914 and then again in 1939. So the world has changed immeasurably since the turn of the century, which is a great thing to see. So the nature of wars have changed. But as you say, the Korean War is a very scary proposition just because of the nature of that war and how quickly that could escalate. So I don't think I'm alone when everyone is absolutely keeping their fingers crossed that can be solved diplomatically. The one thing I've learned as a historian is war is never a good thing. I cannot look back on a war and say that that was a good result for everyone involved. These are terrible things. They have terrible consequences for everyone involved. And we just have to keep our fingers crossed that the cool heads prevail.
And yet, with talk of annihilating the enemy, as Donald Trump said at the UN this week, maybe we've not learned those lessons of the 20th century.
It's always the formula, isn't it, that the politicians make the policy and start the wars, and then it's the poor blokes in the field, and men and women today who have to go out and actually do the work. So,
and in the future, millions of civilians.
Absolutely. So I think everyone agrees that it's great. It's, as you say, it's a great time to cast our mind back and learn these lessons from history. And I think anyone who understands what people had to go through in the First World War, in the Second World War, their places like Passchendaele, we'll see that there is no glory in war, and we'll do whatever we could to stop it from happening again.
I would say it would be more difficult not to enlist than to enlist, because the girls were also very patriotic, and if you didn't go, you were given a white feather. And I was a fair size for my age, and I cut more than one white feather before I enlisted. That didn't shame me into going, because as soon as I was able to, I enlisted.
And the voice you heard at the end of that piece, Ted Smout, a Queenslander who was on the Western Front in World War I in those very trenches at Passchendaele in 1917. He was interviewed by Peter Rubenstein for Voices from the Great War, and you can hear more of that at the Australian War Memorial's website. We thank Peter for his permission to use that audio. And for his insights on the history and also the future of war, thanks to Matt McLaughlin. In that piece, you heard the music of Ralph Vaughan Williams. That was the second movement from his Pastoral Symphony. He conceived of that movement when he was serving on the Western Front as well, firstly as an ambulance officer, and later as an infantryman. The sound of the bugler practicing became part of his understanding of the landscape of the area. And yes, the bugler hits wrong notes, which Vaughan Williams has carefully written into the main theme in that second movement. As only a real artist can, Vaughan Williams' use of that theme and the name Pastoral just points out the horrors of war compared with the ideals that people were fighting for.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.